Hello and welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard. I'm here with Josh Ulsewicz. Hey, Josh.
Brian, good to be with you. Good to be with you out there, listener.
It is great to be with you, listeners. Some of you live, those of you that are with us on Twitch right now, you can subscribe to us on Twitch at twitch.tv/ledgerstatus, and you'll get notifications when we go live, and you can ask us good or bad questions. That's up to you. Hey, you know what? We got a lot of stuff to talk about in my mind, even if not yours. But before we do, I want to talk about our partner for this episode and all episodes of LedgerCast. That's Matcha. Go to ledgerstatus.com/matcha, and you can trade with great liquidity across liquidity pools. The ZeroX protocol folks are behind this, and they came out with a study talking about how their pricing is superior to other aggregators, I think like 8 out of 10 trades. And I have been using Matcha anytime I need to make a sizable trade. They've got curated assets. It works really well, and I recommend it. Check it out. Go to ledgerstatus.com/matcha when you make that trade so that they can know that you came from us. We would really appreciate that, and we're excited to have them as a partner for this podcast. What am I letting Josh say to Twitch?
Saying that, you know, here's the thing, Brian. We can talk about all the news, which we will, but if I'm on my deserted island, today and yesterday is just another day of collecting coconuts. I'm not paying attention to the chart because nothing's going on. There's nothing going on.
Collecting here. Coconuts.
That's my way of yield farming, okay?
Okay.
On my deserted island, I'm collecting coconuts.
I'm disappointed. Considering the quotes in the CFTC charge or whoever made the actual charge, that there's not a coconut finance yet out there where you can farm something. So hot tip to anybody. Hey, Buttertel in the chat said they used Matcha, and it's great with a clean UI. How about that?
I mean, the UI is probably the best thing about it, honestly. The UI is just so good.
And as a person that's been trading this, I've been getting great quotes from it when I want to dump stuff, which is what I've had to do because of the news, is I know I got to move quickly, and I go in there and I say, get this out of my account. Put me in the tethers in the USDCs. Done that a couple times recently. And then I inch my way back in because I just can't stay out of the trade like you. I'm not patient like you, Josh. Coconuts are sound money. High IQ Will says.
You know, people call it patience, but it's almost like you just have to do other things, you know? It's like you can't be, like if you're making money and you're trading, who am I to tell you to do anything different, right? But if you're losing money here, just go do something else, right? It's like there's going to be plenty of opportunities for a trade. It's just September historically is just awful for trading. This September was no different. I think we were... Were we negative on September? Let's look. Oh yeah, we're definitely negative on the month. So we are negative 20 on ETH on the month. Probably not as much for BTC, but.
And you warned people of that. You said September is historically bad.
Wake me up when September ends. People think my memes aren't real life, but trust me.
Honestly, I think you're more of like a, what do you call this? Like a time seasonal, or like a time series type of trader. Seasonal trader, you're more into that than a lot of people are, and I think there's something to it, even though I usually ignore you when you talk about it.
I'm not like, you know, sell a May and go away and actually live that life. I just pay attention to the seasonality. Q3 September is just not good. Q4 is where it's at. October, November historically. So let's get all the bad stuff out of the way here in October 1st. And let's make way for some bullishness here, you know?
Yeah. When I look on your chart or my own, I mean, I see there were 3 or 4 bad days, but other than that, it was all like grinding one way or the other, not too much crazy stuff going on. So I feel like if you just held in September, held Bitcoin, did nothing, or held dollars, did nothing, then you did fine.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah.
That's not what most of us did. Most of us bought into projects that had not been announced, and you had to directly interface with Etherscan. It felt like doing a pull request if anybody's a developer. That's what it felt like buying that Eminence project, which ended up being a big fail. If any of you got half-wrecked with me, we're hinting at some of this news. To me, this was like a news-ageddon week. Let's start where the week started, though, which was KuCoin. KuCoin got hacked. I don't even know. I don't even know the details of this one. Do you know what happened?
I don't. I know it sounded like their hot wallets were getting drained.
Like they're currently getting drained?
No, that they were.
Okay.
I really don't know the details, honestly. I've never been too high on that exchange in general. I used it once a couple of years ago, but I don't know. At some point, you have to expect the littler exchanges, even though KuCoin might have been holding billions, sadly, and it still is in their cold wallet. At some point, you just have to expect this stuff, you know?
Yeah,
so it's like you DeFi people talk about rug pulls and expecting it, and to me that's disgusting, right? Like, why even bother getting involved in this stuff? And people look at centralized exchanges and they say the same thing. They say, of course they're going to get hacked. It's only an eventuality. What are you doing? You know, not your keys, not your coins. So I understand it. I can understand it.
So upwards of about $200 million lost in customer funds. Tether froze $22 million. Stable coins, and then whatever Velo is, 122 million Velo tokens worth about $75 million that were affected will be invalidated. I don't understand how that works with a token. Is that decentralization?
Yeah, I mean, everybody, again, this like I just get sick of the maximalist argument of like yelling at this stuff for not being decentralized. Of course it isn't. It's you got to start with this stuff is not decentralized. It never will be. There's admin keys all over the place. So yeah, they're going to freeze stuff. Tether isn't decentralized. They don't claim to be. I'm actually glad that they're centralized. Somebody can reverse or freeze those transactions. I don't know. It's like, what are people getting upset about when they see like these hacks getting frozen? We're a step away from somebody saying, let's reverse the Bitcoin hacks. Let's do a chain reorg, which did get some public approval, at least briefly, before it was batted away.
Mostly got backlash. There wasn't that much approval for that.
There was some loose approval by some powerful people. We'll say it like that. But
yeah.
So yeah, this stuff happens all the time. Like, what is there to get upset about? Hacks happen all the time. Rug pulls happen all the time. Reversing transactions happens all the time. None of this stuff is decentralized if it's not Bitcoin. Like, end of story. What is there worth discussing there? You know what I mean?
Just the normalization of it, maybe. And then some of these, like a specific...
Well, you have people like me telling people to not get involved, and that doesn't stop people. It doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, because on the whole, there's money to be made even when you're at risk of some of these hacks.
And that's the crux of it right there.
Yeah, you're making a calculation.
I can make more than I'm going to lose, almost guaranteed, but the potential is there. The siren song of participating in a centralized project.
Well, I did it.
Look, doing it doesn't make you a bad person.
Yeah, leading into our
I'm not going to judge you for it. It's just like... You can't complain when bad stuff happens because it's gonna bad stuff's gonna happen, you know.
Hey, that was a nice save. We had a listener last week say, you know what, these guys, you know, they keep it pretty clean. I'm gonna turn this on with my kid in the car, and then Josh tossed a bomb just like a couple minutes in, and I heard you save that. So good job, good on you.
I don't know. To me, again, I don't want to be the party pooper, but it's just tiring to me. All people want to talk about is the flavor of the month DeFi chart, the flavor of the month DeFi farming garbage.
All I want to talk about, tiring. Josh, this is my counter. Now, Your way is a little less stressful, but I want to make money, and I want to make money.
I hear you. I want to make money too. I just don't want to avoid getting rug pulled, right?
I want to make money at multiples that with Bitcoin alone, it has to hit hyper-Bitcoinization to hit my goals. So
yeah, I hear you.
I'm going other routes.
I'm on your side. I'm on your side there, 100%. Yeah.
Hackers drained $15 million from the unreleased Yearn Finance project. they called it, so this is Decrypt saying it was a urine finance project, but it was Andre Kranji. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. They tweeted pictures of it and some of this like not released hype type of stuff. So they have been doing some backtracking, saying like it wasn't ready. It was, you know, like people weren't supposed to buy into it, but you could buy into it. I had some friends that caught onto this pretty early. And what you could do is you could directly through a interface in Etherscan, you could essentially buy into this project through what's called a bonding curve, which gives you basically unlimited liquidity. It just adjusts the price as the bonding curve is filled. So the earlier you get in, the better your price is. It's a way to do a essentially the way to do a pre-sale in a contractual way. And then the bonding curve adjusts based on how much has been put in and all that. So a bunch of people did this, including myself, put money in it directly through those transactions. And then after a few hours, I had watched it double and I was like, wow, this is going pretty great. And I was pretty excited about it. And this is the, you know, Wi-Fi stuff, the people behind Wi-Fi. I was like, this is a pretty big deal. It was only $15 million in at the time. And I was like, that's not very big compared to Wi-Fi and the other folks in this space. And I was feeling good about it. And it was getting dinner time. So I was like, I'm not going to bother taking profit yet. And then I looked on my like token tracker thing on my phone and I saw it just go, like you dump literally to zero, open up the chart. And I'll see if I can find it over here. And the chart, I've never seen anything like it. It was, yeah, I saw myself. You can see it here on this version of it. It went from 28, 30 cents to 0 cents. And it didn't feel good, Josh. Didn't feel good.
And I can't imagine it would.
People started talking about it being a rug pull, but it turned out it was a hack. So a hacker found out a way to do
in air quotes, right? Air quotes.
There. Yeah. There's speculation. I don't believe the speculation. I think it was truly a hacker, but they did make some strange decisions. The hacker did an infinite mint and sold against the bonding curve. So with that bonding curve, you could buy with infinite liquidity and you can sell back against the curve as well, because it essentially created a pool of funds that people had deposited. So if someone sells back to it, then you can do the same thing. And they, the hacker stole $15 million by doing an infinite mint. And then they sent $8 million to the Yearn vault. So like they gave $8 million back to Andre. And yeah. And then people that work for Yearn put together a page so that they actually redistributed that back out to people. So I and others ended up getting what we was termed half-wrecked, because we got some of our money back, which was a surprise, a pleasant surprise, but just a very strange thing all around. Now, in reality, only really the earliest buyers got truly half their money back. Because what you could do is there ended up being multiple bonding curves. So this was this imminence thing. You could buy that directly, and then you can use that to go buy into these E tokens, like E synthetics and E curve. So it got, you know, things distributed out a little further, and the later you bought in, the less you got back. So some people got like a third of their money back. So if you had that in some other altcoin, it probably went down 2/3 in the next couple of days anyway, so it's no different than it would have been for a lot of people. But it was a very strange story, and it's not over yet. Like, it seems like, you know, they're still working on Eminence, whatever it was going to be, and the people that got screwed over by aping into this contract, maybe they'll get a piece of that. And then there's other coins and people that are airdropping stuff to the people that got hacked in that. So if you were involved in it, try to pay attention and see what, see what, if you can be made whole. I certainly will, because I put a penny in there, because I mean, it was the Yearn folks and I was like, all right, this is worth the risk. And I got my butt kicked. What thoughts do you have about it, Josh?
I'm just nodding. I don't really have anything to say other than if it was me, I would think to myself, what am I doing, you know, putting money here in an unaudited contract and expecting anything less? I don't know. Like there's the other thing with cryptos, there's this cult of personality. Talk about Vitalik or
no, yeah. I mean, Andre was like way up high, like 99 reputation points out of 100 because of the Wi-Fi stuff. However, his Twitter bio literally says, I test in production, you know, and it's like, you know, he made claims like you could get destroyed on this. And I listened to an interview that he did with Frank from the block, and it was great. Like you get inside his mind a little bit, and I think he's just a really smart person, but it, you know, putting something out on his public profiles, it's very risky, but it's not necessarily something that should be too surprising based on his personality when I listen to that. Those are the risks you take. That's why you don't go all in on things. But there was a lot of opportunity in that project. I mean, it was up 2x, like with bare only people that knew how to write directly to Etherscan could get in, and it was up 2x. So I think if it, you know, if that vulnerability was not there, it would have been like, I would have been a genius right now. You know, I'd be up like 5 or 10x on that. On that purchase. So those are the risks you take. That's the craziness in DeFi. And there's bugs in lots of things. And I'm curious if people will be able to track that hacker, but holy cow, what a swing of emotions.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't really have anything to say. Other than it's almost like to a point, like, what do you expect? And I get this analogy in my head of somebody like pushing a snowball up a hill. Mm-hmm. And they're like continually pushing it up a hill. They're like making profits, like the snowball's their profits. Okay. So they push up the hill and the snowball at some point just gets so big that it just naturally rolls down the hill. I don't know.
Well, I was, you know, a lot of this stuff really topped, what, maybe 3 weeks ago is when a lot of these DeFi, I have a DeFi perps project. It was September 1st. Yeah, so it's been a full month now of mostly down moves in all this DeFi stuff. So when this happened the other day, I was actually back to my highs in my DeFi portfolio. So I had made up a lot of my whatever the drawdown I had was, which wasn't huge. So like in my personal DeFi portfolio, I had had many multiples from a profit perspective. And I think I maybe took like a 30% drawdown over the first like 3 weeks of the month and or 2 weeks of the month. And I'd made that all the way back up. And so when that happened, when I had that 2X, like when I was in profit before it got hacked, I was like, all right, like we're marking up, you know, it's like your new breakout. And then it whipped me. So the going from the double on that to the loss took me back down into some degree of drawdown off of my highs, but like it's still worth it. Like all this stuff, like, you know, because I'm spread out a little bit. I've been in mostly in stuff that I can cut easily. Like if it breaks down, like I've probably bought either Uni or Curve 5 times in the past 2 weeks, and I just have stopped out of them over and over again. And I've mostly been playing those liquid ones and capturing what gains I can. And if I can't, then I get out. So now the time, now what we'll find out is if the game is truly good and over now, which you think Bitcoin will probably give us the key on that, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know if I made a trade in September at all.
Wow.
I don't think I did. Oh no, I was long. That's right. I was long at 10.4. Held it and then let it go at like 10.2. That's just the BTC trade. Yeah, I mean, you're either doing stuff like you or not doing anything like me. You know, I don't have anything to say about that.
I'm looking up my fees because you can do that fees.wtf website and see how much you've spent, just to get an idea for how many trades I've made in September.
I'm just looking through the BTC charts. Let me find one to start with.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly the day that I last checked it.
Yeah, so if we talk about BTC, like the 200 EMA is at 10K roughly. There's a ton of volume between 8.8 and 10K.
So on the main wallet that I use multiple wallets for this stuff, but on the main wallet, since this all started, I have done over 700 transactions.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and a lot of that was in September. So I've made a trade in September, you could say.
I'd say so, yeah.
It's part of the game.
So yeah, BTC and ETH, I mean, nothing's happened in September. Literally nothing. Price-wise, like, it's just sideways. So according to trends, nothing's really changed. If we look at the cloud,
you know what it looks like to me? You got this volume profile up on that last chart. It looks like we're just building the volume profile at these previously high prices, you know, like the normalization of 10K.
Yeah, we're normalizing five digits, really, if anything. Like, we don't really think about it, but historically, BTC hasn't really been above 10K for a long time. You know, we had this spat in mid-2019. But other than that, really, like, you know, obviously 2017, 2018, but yeah, not much time in 10 years, not much history up here.
Yeah. So, I mean, it doesn't feel like just a massive distribution. It feels more like reaccumulation to me.
Yeah, I mean, this doesn't look Wyckoffian, but you could argue accumulation. I mean, if you want to see Wyckoffian, look at the XMR USD chart. That thing is just beautifully Wyckoffian. Because I'm in it, but
I was in it for a hot minute.
So that's the 50 to 200 and the cloud stuff for BTC and ETH. It's all just no trade zone still. I mean, we talked about that last week, probably even the week before. So for me, what am I supposed to be doing here is nothing, exactly nothing. That's what my system tells me to do.
Yeah. Well, here's the XMR USD chart that you mentioned, which, I mean, looks really good. Like, it looks, XMR looks like it could easily go to its highs, which are $400, which would be about a 4X. Whether it's Wyckoffian, whether it's some kind of head and shoulders, I don't know what you want to call it.
It's 100% Wyckoffian. It is so perfectly Wyckoffian for me. Not that I'm an expert on Wyckoffian accumulation or whatever, but
yeah. I actually got in and out for a profit, but not what I wanted. Like, I was looking for that markup, you know, like make new highs.
Yeah. It's still got a chance to do that, but
which would take it to maybe like 160, but
it's looked the best it's looked in 2 years easily.
Yeah.
Easily.
And that's just the USD pair. I actually love the BTC pair on XMR as well. This is not the full history. It's just the Binance history. But when it broke 0.0089, I mean, this weekly, maybe it'll retest that breakout level. That's probably the place to re-enter. But it looks like it could double on a BTC basis with massive volume. There was some rumor that the KuCoin hackers may have been helping pump that up as well.
Yeah, it always makes you wonder when a legitimate privacy coin is being increased in price as hacks are happening.
Yeah.
And there's a ransomware article on the internet probably twice a day at this point. So Monero is churning on many levels, and the transactions per day are at an all-time high on the network as well. So there's a lot of transactions on Monero right now.
Tell me if this is a big deal in a semi-related privacy thing. There's a privacy situation going on. I feel like privacy coins are in the news a little bit. I think it was, oh crap, I don't remember which exchange. One of the exchanges, Gemini enabled shielded transactions as withdrawals from the exchange, which had to be a regulatory hurdle in a big way, but they did it.
So apparently they, according to a Zeek person I talked to, what is enabled on Gemini is transparent to shielded and not shielded to shielded. So it's not end-to-end encryption, for lack of a better word. So it's still traceable. And that's always the thing. Like, Monero is never going to get listed on Coinbase. It's never going to get listed on most exchanges because of regulatory reasons. That's how you know a privacy coin works.
Yeah.
It's bad for price, but fundamentally, the coin is super strong. So when you see exchanges listing Zcash, that's a signal that the privacy is either snoopable, easily detectable, or it's not really private at all. And so to me, good for Manette, good for Zeke, good for that community. But at the end of the day, those aren't really privacy coins. They just aren't.
I like that take. And I like Monero. I'm going to look for re-entry. I just didn't get it yet.
It's the same reason why the government, U.S. government, is asking people to hack Monero and hack Lightning.
Yeah,
you know, they're not asking people to hack Zcash.
They already did.
Chain analysis can easily figure out what's going on with Zcash. So, yeah.
I like that take. Hey, another position that I've been in is ZRX. The USD pair, the BTC pair, I like them both. But USD looks like it flipped this kind of 33 to 40 cent range from resistance to support. It's also right on the 200-day moving average on the USD pair. It's not really like a chart level that I like, a chart pattern or anything that I love. It just looks like a range flip. It's also the 200-day moving average on the BTC pair.
I think it's hard to justify a long position though. In that, like, what are you buying? The long-term opportunity? Like, what's your time frame on that trade?
Weeks.
Okay.
So I like on the BTC pair back to like 6K. Which is almost a double from the current setup. I'm curious though, if you see anything from a pattern perspective, or could this, like, do you think this has a similar Wyckoff argument? Now it was at above 6K before, and it's dropped off over the past month. But I don't know. It looked like a good range retest of this kind of 35 to 38K range. By the way, your screen is just stuck on one image. I don't know if you know that.
Oh yeah, that's the chart. That's Link BTC. I was going to share that in a second, but it doesn't look like coffee to me. What I'm looking at there is that Adam and Eve that broke up, and so price is currently on that support resist level. So it's definitely an important level. Not like it's rocket science, but the level that it's at is it needs to hold that for sure.
Yeah, it's a risk reward level that I'm okay with, I guess, is the way that I look at it.
Another thing you could do is draw a diag from the low to the next higher low, and just see where that lines up with the current price.
Yeah, if it's going to break down.
Something else to consider.
That'd be the type of level that I would probably sell anyway. break of new lows.
That doesn't look great. Link VTC doesn't look great. We talked about this maybe five episodes ago, about this head and shoulders, this glorious looking possibility of a head and shoulders. It's still there. Still hasn't gone away. Volume profile is perfect for it, by the way. Declining.
Yeah, it is.
And the pitchfork will set you free, because the median line of the pitchfork is also the
break of the
decline of the head and shoulders.
Link and Wi-Fi both kind of have that head and shoulders.
Oh my potential. God, Wi-Fi is someone said this earlier today, it's a Mona Lisa. it is one of the best looking cases for head and shoulders. It's not like perfect, the volume profile isn't there, the shoulders aren't like equal, but there's clearly three peaks there, you know?
Oh yeah, it's a very clear three peaks, equal bottoms on a daily close basis, and
yeah.
The third is a lower high. Like, it's got all the juice you want. I think it could go back to like.
Don't tell me you're bullish.
No, I'm not. I think it could go back to like 14K.
I'd have to measure it out, but I think the point is though, like, you see that on a chart, you see that on any chart, regardless of what it is, and it's tough to buy at that level, right? Like,
it's tough to buy, but it's also, I mean, like Lul What said in chat, I kind of agree. It looks a little too easy.
People say that a lot too. Like, this pattern can't work out because it's so obvious. It's everybody sees it. I hear that all the time. I heard that. You know what I heard that actually? A really great is this inverted head and shoulders on BTC back in 2018. This year. People were saying, oh no, that can't work out. It's too obvious.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to trade it like that. It's like, that's the point. That's the point of chart patterns. Okay.
You want people to see
them.
It.
And I say, okay, everybody else sees this. It's self-fulfilling prophecy, whatever. I don't care. But that's why chart patterns work, you know?
Yeah. I think what my justification for this is if you try to enter it at 20,000, 21,000, you need to have a tolerance, because I think it's not really invalidated until it's over maybe like 25,000 again. So like even 20, maybe 23,000 is a very normal kind of last hurrah before it breaks down. But I don't really think it's properly invalidated until over about 25. So you got a 20% like upside tolerance that you have to have, before it is invalidated. And the downside is what, maybe 33% to get to that 14K, take profit. So you got to be careful with your entry. And I feel like you could very easily just get stopped out of that from a short side, rather than just waiting on the thing to bleed out and buy it when it looks good.
Yeah. I mean, you could start small and then add and then add more when you're convinced that it breaks lows. Like you don't have to, it's harder to do because it takes more finesse perhaps than just like shorting everything right now. But that's one way to manage that situation. If you're not sure, but you're pretty sure, open a position, small, add to it if it goes higher. And then if it goes higher, you cut it. If it goes lower, you add a lot.
Yeah. The other thing this coin has done twice now, or maybe twice, is when it made a new daily close low and then swings it back up, it's got the potential to do that again here today. So we'll find out maybe by the time some of these folks are listening to this, like, did it properly close below about 21,000 and did it pop right back up? Like, it went as low as 18.8 today on a wick. So if it closes back up, like, I do think it could swing back up and go to 25 or make some kind of lower high. And I don't want to be like in this, like, I don't want to hold it, but it's a DeFi darling.
I don't want to be on Josh, but I don't know enough about the fundamentals to understand, like, if that does go lower, how does that affect things? You know,
I think it's enough of a DeFi darling that it like helps just, I don't know that it just creates a rotation trade that people easily go into something else. You know, like, I think it can be heavy on the broader market to a degree. Andre, who's behind it, same guy we have already been talking about, like, he says that the token doesn't really have value, but in reality, the token does have value. Like, there are some fundamental reasons why you can assign some value to it with the time value locked and other elements of how the token ecosystem works. But it's long. It's the run was hot and it needs to cool. And that may be true still for several DeFi projects. Maybe there can still be some rotation on some coins that have already gotten beat up enough. Like, I mean, we've seen full retraces and new lows and all that, full market cycles on some of these coins already. So does that mean Wi-Fi is just that strong that it, you know, it's 50% off the highs, but it started at like sub 5K. And it's at 20K, you know, still 4X off the lows. So it's tough, man. It's tough. Is there a new leg in DeFi, or is DeFi dead for now from an investment or from a swing trade perspective?
Yeah, like you said, you could have this argument with a lot of coins. Link, I think, as well. Same thing.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I bought Link last week. I think we recorded the podcast after I bought it. And it was an awesome trade, but I was like, I'm not going to be bullish on this over $10. You know, I got the 30% and it looks like a bearish retest, like just a response trade. Is that what you have on right now? No, that's Bitcoin.
No, I was going to pull up the 20 SMA for BTC.
So I feel like personally, the long side of a lot of these altcoins, I think they're going to be dependent on Bitcoin. I feel like Bitcoin dominance has an opportunity here to catch up. Ooh, look at the Bitcoin dominance chart. Like, ooh, maybe it's just a time for Bitcoin to take over. Like any moves we get are just going to be represent, you know, lagging Bitcoin as a whole, maybe. Like that's Bitcoin dominance made a nice higher low. A return to mean would be back to like 63 from 59. That would make sense to me.
Yeah, but the question is always, how does it get there? Does everything dump with alts dumping harder, or does BTC pull up and alts just kind of stay flat?
Yeah. I don't know, but you win half the battle if you know, if you have some conviction that you need to have minimal exposure to alts for a while.
Yeah, and I'd agree that Q4 is Bitcoin's time, baby. If it's any time, it's Q4.
Yeah, so I think if we follow the pattern, which we never do the same thing, but we had a big alts move before Bitcoin really did anything, whereas everyone was like, Bitcoin's got to run and then alts can do something. So maybe the next big run for alts would be after Bitcoin has that Q4 move. So maybe your Christmas presents could be some big rebound plays on altcoins, but for now, staying relatively low risk with holding Bitcoin, maybe Ethereum, keep some stablecoin exposure to buy dips, etc. I still have a lock on, like, I can't not look at these 200-day moving averages, Bitcoin and Ethereum. $9,400 on Bitcoin now. On Ethereum, I think it's like $280, something like that. $264 right now. I know we don't just guarantee tests of those things, but I feel like they're catching up. And we're still dinking about, like, not making any kind of higher high. I feel like we're almost destined to go tap those before the end of the year. Question is, how far up do they move first, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just waiting for the cloud to tell me what to do, basically.
What is the cloud telling you to do right now?
I'm at the whims of the cloud.
The cloud is indecisive at the moment, but where are your breakpoints?
Basically, any lower low for BTC or ETH past the current low of today's low.
So like 10.2?
Yeah, so it's what is this, 340 for ETH? What's the BTC level? Just pulling it up here. 10.25, yeah, something like that.
Yeah, that'd be a third test on that 10.2 weekly, which would make me feel like we're going to dump below it.
I just don't know. These wicks here, was that the MicroStrategy?
That's a good question. Maybe that's where they were buyers.
I think it was too late. I think they bought earlier on.
I thought their average was like 11K, so maybe they okay. were the distribution up top, you know?
Maybe. But yeah, these wicks here, if we break below these wicks, then we're in trouble for sure.
That's why I think that's a quick $1,000 move. If we break down, that's your 9.2 to 9.4 that we've talked about wanting to be buyers.
I'm a buyer if we go lower, but I'm going to short on the way there, you know, like 8.2, 8.1 is a big level. There's lots of levels here. It just depends on how it looks once we break out to the downside. If we break the downside, you could call this a head and shoulders, I guess.
Yeah, I don't see that. The other problem I have with it is failing 10.2 fails the 20-week moving average, which we've talked about a lot as being important. It fails the meme diagonal from forever. The December 2017 tap, June 2019 tap, that you could say we broke out of it. Very meme-ish, but it would break it. It would break the weekly high from early 2020. There's a lot of stuff that would say, like, whatever time we spend below 10.2 needs to be real fast. Like, it needs to be a drop and pop. Because if it's not, then as much as we want it to stop at 9.2, it might hurt a little more.
Yeah, I just think everything needs more time for me to make a decision.
The longer we spend above 10K, the more likely that the next move is just up. Like, if bad news happens in the world, if we get hacks, if we get charges against BitMEX, if we get Trump gets COVID, if all this stuff keeps happening, like this kind of bad news, and we just sit here chilling at 10K, then we're building a core for a nice up move.
I'd agree with that. Yeah. If you don't, I forget what the saying is, but if you don't go down on bad news, you're in a bull market or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think that's obvious anyway, but.
So let's get to that news, which is, I mean, it's not the craziest thing in the world. We knew there were some probes and all that, but the CFTC and the Department of Justice filed charges directly against the owners of BitMEX. Multiple Americans involved, Ben Delos, Sam Reed, and then Arthur Hayes. And Sam Reed was temporarily in custody, and they charged them with violating CFTC rules by failing to implement Know Your Customer procedures and anti-money laundering procedures, and they want to present them in federal court. The Bank Secrecy Act of evading U.S. anti-money laundering requirements was quoted by FBI Assistant Director William Sweeney. Overall, the whole thing was 40 pages, and BitMEX came out with a blog post saying that they would vigorously defend themselves in this. I mean, it's certainly a big deal. They've also got very good lawyers, and I'm sure that they will fight it. There's some interesting components of it, because the anti-money laundering stuff, like, that's kind of where they hung their hat. But it's not like BitMEX was dealing in securities. It's not that type of complaint, like what happened back in the day with one broker or whatever. Right. BitMEX has always just dealt with Bitcoin. Like, you send Bitcoin, and then everything you use as a product there from there is like some kind of synthetic of Bitcoin for trading various products. So this was much more around like who was trading there. They quoted some Iranians and saying that the founders knowingly engaged with customers who they knew were Iranian, who were, you know, on U.S. sanctions list. It's big news. It was big news.
Yeah, it's a big deal for sure. They allegedly did some stuff that they shouldn't have done.
Yeah, and the fact that it was more than it was a civil, there was a civil suit involved, but there are criminal charges associated with. That's where, to me, like it went from like a, you know, the hammer comes down on BitMEX to like, wow, like there, you know, there's potential jail time involved here, and are they going to try to make an example and all that and. That's pretty brutal. Like, I hate it for the space. And also, like, I don't know. I don't like that in a human manner either. And hopefully the charges are false about, you know, knowingly enabling money laundering and some of those other things. But it's not a great look for Bitcoin. If you would have told us this years ago, we would have said Bitcoin dropped like 20% instantly because of it. And as we already mentioned, like, you wouldn't be able to detect this on a chart. So the market mostly shrugged it off.
Yeah, I think at a different point in time, it would have been much bigger news. BitMEX has slowly kicked off most of the world at this point. So I think that's part of it. I don't know. I don't think, I mean, BitMEX was flirting with some issues for a long time, so I don't think anybody was surprised necessarily that charges were brought up, but like you said, maybe the criminal stuff is a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, they're registered in the Seychelles, and only one of the founders was in the U.S. that they took into custody, and it's now out of custody, but they are processing withdrawals. They processed withdrawals, I think, three times yesterday instead of once, so it wasn't like funds were frozen or anything like that. Or too many people were in custody so that they couldn't process them, because I think they have a multi-sig setup for processing withdrawals. I think a lot of that helped allay some of the market concerns.
So yes, the dip, concerns were assuaged.
Yeah, dip was pretty short-lived. If all this goes through the process, like their insurance fund and their assets, I mean, there's lots and lots of Bitcoin involved there that could cause questions in the future. So the story's far from over.
Oh, for sure. And I guess the surprise was the charges were brought, but the website was still working. The withdrawals still worked, unlike one broker where everything was kind of Well, even in that case, the withdrawals still went through, but the trading was halted, right? So
yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like in some ways it kind of protects customers a little more, protects market participants. Like if
you, yeah, I mean, you're better off. Just look at Mt. Gox. Like, you're better off getting your withdrawal as soon as humanly possible.
Yeah.
Than waiting for the courts to decide when to give it to you, right?
Right. And then less than 24 hours later, Donald Trump was, it was reported that he was positive with COVID, which again affected all markets, particularly legacy.
That's another like non-surprise thing, you know?
I agree. I totally agree with that.
It's like, here's a guy who is exposed to all sorts of people, doesn't like wearing yeah. a mask, tells people they're bad for wearing a mask. Like, it's not a surprise that he got COVID, right?
I think it's more just the role. I'm going to try to take the other side of this a little bit. Like, I think he made too light of the mask stuff and everything. At the same time, I've heard Trump, and actually, like, George Bush was really famous for this. Like, a lot of presidents and politicians are super germaphobes. So he may not wear a mask, but he, like, they're very clean, you know, like they,
they
shake 500 hands, they're washing their hands. Like, so maybe they become super spreaders if they're not careful. But, point being, it's not a surprise that he got COVID because COVID is very contagious. And it had about a 1.5% move on the S&P 500 overnight. It happened literally right before I went to bed, or I would have taken the few positions I had back to cash again. so I missed out on that. It had more of an effect on crypto than legacy because of liquidity mostly. But Bitcoin had a pretty instant reaction that – let's see. Nope, that was the BitMEX news that caused that one. It's this one here. Yeah, crypto went down about 2.5% on Bitcoin, and then – Ethereum and others went down even more. Let's see, about 5% top to bottom on Ethereum and even more on altcoins. So just more selling pressure because it just introduces more uncertainty in the world, right?
Yeah, it does. But I guess if we were sitting here and we were breaking the range, the levels we're talking about on like 10.2 or 350, 340, whatever it is on ETH, like if we were breaking the range, we'd say, oh my God, it's such an impactful piece of news. But it didn't, like the range is held, right? So like if we're going to break a range, that's the range we're going to break if the news is like super important and relevant, you know? We're still, basically I'm saying we're still range bound even despite all this stuff.
It was brought up in the chat by somebody. Sorry, don't see it anymore. That gold actually did the inverse, went up 1% almost instantly. So interesting difference between, it was the Arctic one. Thank you for bringing that up. So gold went up, BTC went down, stocks went down. I don't know what to take from that.
Yeah. I can say that the correlations are now negative with BTC and SPX, BTC and NASDAQ. About 30-day rolling, negative 30%, basically, correlation there.
And while we talk about that, before people say, oh, yeah, you and your correlations, y'all conveniently decide to forget about them, I think some of the recovery that we had in crypto, the dollar chilled. Like, the dollar went from 94.70 down to sub-94. But it's basically right at a retest of the breakout level. So now it brings us to a new decision point. But the quietness in our markets, where we were pretty strong over the course of the week, despite some of the news, like, we got to see what the dollar does from here. If the dollar had, if this ends up being a fake out breakout, like a not going to the full measured move, which was my prediction, and I actually think that we could totally break down here, that would be bullish for all asset classes because, you know, the dollar goes to crap. I'd be really fascinated if that happens, but I'm going to have to watch this level closely to see if, are we going to stay range bound and this pattern becomes something else? Like, it's not the head and shoulders doesn't do it, doesn't cut it. If we break, if we break down properly and like invalidate the inverse head and shoulders, then, you know, the dollar could really move down, which I think would spike all of these markets. Bitcoin goes up, gold goes up, stocks go up. I would like that. my bias is like, wants the dollar to break down here.
Yeah, I guess I keep saying this, but it's like news happens, prices in the range. News happens, prices in the range. The next piece of news that happens and we just so happen to break the range, it's going to be this piece of news caused this, right? When I just don't care, right? Here's the range. If we break it one way or the other, there's your trade. Like, end of story. So yeah, it's good to look at the correlations. It's good to look at the VIX, which is just chilling at 27 right now.
Yeah, the VIX, I mean, it stayed positive on the day because of the overnight stuff, but it has faded off a lot, as you would expect, as the market recovered. Right into the 200-day moving average, for what it's worth, is where it stopped. I know a lot of people get mad at me when I talk about TA on the VIX, but I will continue to do it while it shows me things that are interesting. So it wicked right into the 200-day from the underside, which, again, supports to me. Look, you know, some of this started before even Trump got COVID, before BitMEX. Just the night of the debate and the absolute clown show that was. But there was a sentiment shift in futures markets where they went down, but then they bought back up because a lot of people, and there's even reports saying, like, Republican insiders are giving up on the presidential election and now trying to preserve the Senate. And there was this sentiment shift, like, Joe Biden didn't pull like a complete weekend at Bernie's. He looked alive and there, like maybe he can win now. Maybe he can do it. And like there was this interesting market shift in regard to that. And I think if the market decides, no matter who is president, just certainty is bullish, then I think that leaves upside in legacy markets and therefore less downside and potential upside in crypto as well. I don't want to get deep on the political side of it, but I think that the fear of regime shift is being eliminated from the market. What do you think about that?
I think that's fair to say. I think the reality of regime shift is becoming more and more apparent, especially in the betting markets. As soon as Trump got COVID, Biden spiked to like 70% on FTX.
Yeah.
70 cents. I don't know how to actually read this chart, but it expires at a dollar. So, yeah, I mean, the betting markets are convinced that as in this moment, Biden is your next president. What so, I don't know.
Yeah, Trump wins is at 0.36 now.
Crazy. It's a month away. He could be sick. He could have COVID for 4 weeks minimum, right? Like, I can't imagine he does any more debates, right?
They're pausing his schedule for like 10 days.
Yeah. Because he's contagious for 30 to 40 days.
That long?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, dude.
Wow.
Google it, dude.
I don't know. Hey, before we...
Siri. Hey, Siri.
Before we leave, we got a question about charting other securities, Galaxy Digital Holdings in particular. And what we think that means. I guess another one, I saw Lynn Alden, who's a great macro strategist person in legacy markets. She is actually treating MicroStrategy as a little Bitcoin ETF. You can also trade GBTC. So there's probably three or four legacy security products that you can trade now for crypto exposure. Galaxy is one. This one was the one that was trading way under NAV, and I guess Mike Novogratz bought some of it himself. So it's recovered like 400% off its lows in March. But whether it's tradable or not, I don't really know. It's definitely got a lot more volume than it used to have. I don't have anything to make of it. Do you?
No, that chart doesn't really look great. I mean, it kind of looks like crypto in general right now. Something else you could trade is like NVIDIA or like the ASIC chip miners.
Yeah. I tend to just lean towards GBTC if I'm looking for exposure in legacy markets. GBTC almost to me feels like I'm trading like a 3x Bitcoin ETF because the premium adjusts in addition to the price itself. So if we get like really big dumps in the market, but I'm still bullish, sometimes I'll go in and I'll buy up some GBTC and try to get some exposure that way. But I don't have any Galaxy Brain strategies other than that. And then finally, gold is now sitting at resistance after breaking down from the pennant that we questioned whether it was too obvious. I got in anyway. But it's recovered back to where I'm essentially at break even on my positioning. Should I get out here on the bearish retest, or do you think this is just going to continue sideways and as people buy the dip, continue to seek exposure to gold and metals?
I feel like if anything, gold is going to be the most sensitive to presidential anything, stimulus anything.
In a good way.
War, anything. Like if suddenly we're attacked because of the president.
All of these things sound kind of bullish to me.
Bullish for gold, sure. But like I'm just saying, like to me, if I'm a gold bug or looking to get into a gold trade, any external geopolitical event or domestic in the U.S. is going to drastically affect that, I think.
Yeah. The only thing maybe that would affect it in the downward sense would be contraction in the market that's more permanent. Like there was a report saying something like a third of all New York City restaurants are going to close permanently now. So if we get
I see closings for restaurants in D.C. Yeah. every day, multiple permanently. Yeah.
So if we get more of the permanent job loss, which is those numbers are on the way up, if we get more of that stuff and we don't get enough money printing and stimulus, which
it's look at COVID. COVID is still here. It's not gone away. Nothing's changed. Right. It's not gotten better.
Right. If we don't.
So there's no certainty for if you're a restaurant person or if you're an entertainment industry adjacent or whatever, you have no certainty in your future right now. You know.
So if the V-shaped recovery stalls out, then maybe that could affect gold. Like, and if we don't print our way out of it further, it looks like we're going to print some more. It looks like the next stimulus for Americans is going to be another round of printing that goes straight to Americans, which I think would just juice all this stuff, like, you know, gold stocks, et cetera, election uncertainty ending at the same time. Like it'd all be happening together. And I feel like that would probably make markets go up, even if it's not really the enough of a stimulus for the proper economy.
Yeah, I don't see how we can have uncertainty continue and no stimulus, because then we're just going to have more mass unrest than we already do. You know, people are going to lose their house. People are going to lose their business and they're going to have no future. And when you don't have a future, you don't care what happens in the now. So you tend to participate in things that you wouldn't otherwise participate in, you know?
And Bitcoin will still be stuck between $9,000 and $11,000.
Well, hey, you know, whatever the cloud tells me, that's what I'm going to do. I'm simply a conduit of the great cloud overlords, okay?
All right. Well, that's all y'all need to know. If we break 10.2, Josh will be in a trade. I'll probably make 15 trades between now and then. Thanks for joining us today. We'll still be on Twitch for a couple of minutes to answer any more questions that you have. Rate us on iTunes. We love those iTunes ratings. We need to be found by the people if the great bull market will continue. We need your help for that. Thanks for being here. We'll talk to you later. Have a good one. Monuments crumble in the blink of an eye. The easy river just run dry.